774 ABC Melbourne.
You're with Patricia Karvelas.
Two pretty spectacular films to talk about today. Go through them. It's Calvary.
Yeah, look, I think we should kick things off with Calvary. And thankfully, we've both seen this film. I actually saw this film for a second time this afternoon, which may make me a bit of a masochist.
The second time. That's interesting. Well, look, our talkback theme for this next half hour is actually films that weren't what you expected. So give us a call if a film, you know, you thought it was going to be something and it wasn't that thing. 1-300-222-774. You can text us 0437-774-774. And the reason we decided on this topic was because this film was not what I expected.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have had that reaction to this film.
I thought maybe that was just me.
No, you're not alone. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the writer-director of this film, Irish filmmaker John Michael McDonagh, his previous feature film was The Guard, which was a sort of an Irish take on the buddy cop genre with Don Cheadle and Brendan Gleeson. And while that film did get into some sort of black comedy terrain, for the most part it was sort of light and fluffy and action-packed. And I think people went in expecting this film to retread a similar style of humour. And a lot of people, myself included, have been walking out feeling more than a little devastated.
Let's play the trailer for this film so that people can get a sense of it, and then we'll keep talking.
What do you want to say to me? I'm here to listen to whatever you have to say.
I'm going to kill you, Father.
Certainly a startling opening line.
Do you think it was an idle threat?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
If you're not sure, means it's possible.
Body of Christ.
Things you hear in confession these days. Do you know what felching is?
I do know what felching is, yeah.
I have to look it up.
That's what I've always liked about you, Father. You're just a little too sharp for this parish.
Interesting man, your father. A good man, a fine man. Nobody around here has a bad word to say about him. Makes you wonder what he's hiding.
I'm going to kill you because you're innocent. I give you enough time to put your house in order. Sunday week, let's say.
That's Calvary, or the trailer for Calvary, which we're also taking talk back on films that weren't what you expected. 1-300-222-774. And Josh, I'll tell you not disappointed. I actually thought it was a very good film. So I'm not suggesting it's not a good film, but it was the description, black comedy. So I thought there'd be more gags.
Yep.
Not enough gags for me.
Right.
Very sad. Very, very sad film.
This is a really tragic film, and hence my call about describing myself as a masochist for wanting to see it again.
Yeah, I don't think I could see it twice.
I think it moved me more second time around, partly because I knew how the narrative was going to resolve itself, and so I was sort of anticipating the trauma ahead. I think the other reason that people might go in expecting a more comic style of film is because of the caliber of actors in this film. I mean, we have not only Brendan Gleeson, who is remarkable in this film.
Remarkable,
but,
absolutely.
Two actors in particular, two Irish actors who are probably best well known for their TV sitcom work, and that's Dylan Moran from Black Books and Chris O'Dowd from The IT Crowd, who I have to say are not only quite comic at points in this film, but show off sides of their, I guess, their dramatic repertoire that I have never seen before and pull it off in a really impressive manner. Look, maybe we should give the audience an idea of the plot of this film. Okay, so the film stars Brendan Gleeson. He's a priest in a small town off the west coast of Ireland in County Sligo. The first scene of the film, he's in the confessional booth. The camera's in there on a tight close-up on his face in a long take. We don't see the person in the confessional next to him,
no.
But what we hear is a description about an abuse when he was 7 years old at the hands of another priest who's now deceased. And he decides that he's going to find his retribution by killing Father Lavelle.
Well, he threatens him, doesn't he? He
says, in 8 days' time.
You'll be dead in a week.
Yeah, Sunday week, I'm going to kill a priest on a Sunday because there's a good laugh. And that's the only way to make a statement in this world is to kill an innocent priest as opposed to killing a priest with a history in inverted commas. This film reminded me in a number of ways of films like, it borrows from a number of genres. I think this is a really film-savvy director. But one of the films that instantly came to mind was the film Seven, the David Fincher film with Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt.
Because you're right. I didn't think of that, but now I have. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I think the film almost gives a sense of misdirection at the opening because it gives the impression that the film is going to be a kind of a whodunit or who's going to do it. Mm. And I don't think that's really while that's the structure of the film, that's not really what the film's exploring. I think the film's really exploring this idea of a man who's questioning his faith and questioning the society and the community around him in this context, one that seems to have is the fallen world, a world consumed by sin, sort of sin everywhere he looks. And this idea of can he redeem it, should he even try to redeem it, which is really what those two cop figures in Seven were trying to do. And they, I mean, even though they represent kind of polar opposites in terms of their philosophical positions, one is the naive cop who believes that he can make a difference, yeah. and Morgan Freeman is the sort of cynical cop who fight even though he sees the world has fallen irretrievably. You know, and the structure of the film, which plays out on almost a day-by-day chapter, you know, we get that sense of the time ticking and how will this resolve.
And we know we're counting down to something very bad happening, don't we?
Indeed.
Which is when I started realising I wasn't going to laugh that much, because I realised I was actually counting down the entire film to, you know, something bad happening, let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I walked out with the impression of the tragedy and the trauma at the end is so strong that I actually had forgotten and needed to be reminded that there are some quite funny jokes earlier on, but the balance definitely shifts.
Sparse.
Well, yeah, they are sparse, and they're nowhere near as kind of as punchy or as pithy as they are in The Guard. Mm. You know, but I think that's part of the film's what makes me think this is such an extraordinary film. And I really do. I think this is, in terms of the films I've seen halfway through the year, this really stands out as one of the more impressive films. And it almost has the structure of a Western as well. You know, you think of a film like High Noon, where the sheriff has sort of been abandoned by his community, abandoned by the town, left to face up against the kind of the bad gunslinger who's coming into town, and that's the kind of crescendo of the film. This is almost the same thing, but taken from the perspective of a priest, which is really interesting in the context of Ireland and, you know, all of the kind of compensation that's being paid out, sins of the past and the sins of the father that are now being brought to light. This is a film that I think works on the specific cultural level of Ireland, but also on a very not necessarily universal.
Oh,
but
it is. It's now an international issue. The Catholic Church is grappling with this issue. No, I thought that connection was certainly easy to make.
Yep.
And I've got to say, I've always you know, slightly laugh at people who talk about cinematography. I can't help myself, but I'm going to do it. What a beautiful film. I mean, I just wanted to go to Ireland, yeah. like tomorrow, didn't yeah. you?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, my partner's Irish, so she won't mind me saying that.
So you have been to Ireland?
I have.
And you want to go tomorrow?
I would, yeah. I'd jump on a plane if someone's offering to pay for the fare. But the colour palette of this film as well, I mean, this is a film that's, I think, a triumph on so many levels. The use of the colour red is really amazing, and it reminds me of those classic Hollywood films that use, you know, cinematography and news kind of art direction in this manner, because they create a world that is that sort of reference to, like, his personal hell, like the bar, which is the centre of all the sin in the town, that he keeps kind of going back there, and he's being tempted by his demons of the past, his alcoholism, and, you know, it's bathed in red light. You know, there's such a wonderful kind of play of colours. This is, you know, if you go in there and you're not just there for a laugh, you don't want a kind of relaxing Saturday evening,
no.
I think this is a really remarkable
and
film.
And this is what I mean by the false advertising.
Yeah.
I went in for a laugh and I didn't get a laugh, but I got a very beautiful film. I feel like if perhaps they were clearer that it was actually, you know, there might be a few gags, but it is a drama. I think it is just a drama.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair enough. Yeah, absolutely.
Then perhaps, you know, you'd make a choice about the sort of mood you're in and what you want. 1-300-222-774. We want to hear from you about films that have not quite been what you thought they'd be. I've got a couple of text messages from Dawn Till Dusk.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The first half is a road movie and then suddenly it becomes an all-out, you know, balls-to-the-wall vampire film.
Well, yeah, that's kind of switching, you know.
It's pretty extreme in terms of the
road now.
And it also had two directors. I think Tarantino directed the first half and then gave it over to Robert Rodriguez for the second. So it has a completely sort of schizophrenic tone.
Team directing.
Quality. Yeah.
And another SMS here, £7 with Will Smith, a surprising redemption theme.
You know, that's sort of passed me by. It hasn't stuck with me, that's for sure.
No, it hasn't stuck with me either. But yeah, well, I think it was quite a beautiful film, and I think it's getting largely good reviews. Actually, someone tweeted yesterday, an Age journalist, Calvary, didn't work for me. Twitter, do you agree with me? And I wrote back, yeah, I can kind of see what you mean. I mean, I thought it was rather slow. Did you?
No.
You love it. You just loved it.
Yeah,
I saw it twice.
I'm pretty obsessed with this film. Yeah.
Okay.
It has a deliberate pacing. You know, it's not a film that drives, on action. It's a film that drives through character and through the kind of the personal relationships.
Yeah, 1-300-222-774. Films that weren't what you expected. We're talking Calvary. In a few minutes, we'll be talking about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
You're with Patricia Carvelis.
We've got a potentially hilarious phone call from Nick from Roeville. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Oh, with an Irish accent, just to get us
yeah,
in the mood.
Yeah, well, that's probably why it's hilarious. But look, I have watched Calvary and really enjoyed it. It was tremendously moving film. But there's one thing that perturbs me about the trend with Irish movies, and that is they always seem to want to play the scenery card. You know, as if, you know, look at these grim things that are happening around the place here, but look at the scenery, for God's sake. Can't be all bad there.
Well, they sort of use it as a bit of a tourism.
Well, they probably do. And it also was interesting for me was that, you know, from locations, and why they do this is beyond me, but they seem to do it. Most of the film is filmed in Sligo, you know, on the West Coast. Yet when they show you the actual village where it's supposed to be taking place, or the small town, it's 200 or 300 kilometres away outside of Dublin.
So it's also false advertising.
Yes. Yeah. But look, an excellent film and some great acting.
You loved it? Did you think it was false advertising, though, or am I sort of pushing that point too much?
No, I didn't. I wasn't disappointed like you were in terms of, you know, you were looking for a little bit of a comedy.
I was looking for a laugh, yeah.
I hadn't read very much about it. And so I wasn't. And I just thought the two themes in it were that I took from it was, one was, yes, look at these horrible things that have happened with the church in Ireland and all that. And we tend to kind of think that all the clergy in Ireland and in Australia, they're all rotten and that. But it brought through that point that there are good people in the clergy as well. There are good priests and there's people there doing a lot of good, you know.
I think that was the tragedy, wasn't it?
That was the tragedy.
The best priest that you could possibly find, I think. I mean, the priest in this film is everyone's counsellor.
He
really plays the traditional role of what a priest was meant to be, which is looking after everyone.
Yeah, what a performance, you know, from Brendan Gleeson.
I loved, thanks for your call, Nick. I loved his relationship with his daughter too.
Yeah, we didn't mention that. Kelly Riley, another actress who probably doesn't get enough meaty roles, at least on screen, and she really gets to do something here quite impressive. I love the kind of the banter and the... I guess the tragedy, you know, between them as well and their past. I mean, you know, everything here works on that kind of broader political level and the historical level, and also on that personal level, and they sort of reflect each other in a really nice way. I just on the scenery here, I think part of it, you know, maybe you could in hindsight look at it as a bit of a tourist campaign for Ireland.
Well, I want to go.
Not in the same way that some of Australian films do it, though. I think that's pretty shameless from my own personal point of view. But there's I should have checked this before I came on air, the large mountain that we see time and time again filmed in through sort of helicopter shots and wide angle shots, you know, I think that the constant reference to that is like the place where Jesus is crucified, you know, how that's often reflected in cinema and this idea of him being a kind of a Christ-like figure and the kind of potential crucifixion that awaits him at the end of the film. So I think it does tie back into the themes and the narrative there. It's not just a kind of a, you know, look how pretty the country is when everything else is going to hell.
No, you're right. I found that the scenery was, you know, beautifully linked to whatever the conversation even was.
Yeah.
I've got a few good text messages. Bridge to Terabithia, promoted as a kid's adventure film, but rather a beautiful but tragic story of child illness and mortality. Another one, The Tourist, with the publicity surrounding, thought it would be no good, but loved it, says Crystal. And Baraka, I kept waiting for the dialogue and story to start, says Jane from Brighton. And this text message, I don't think this will surprise you. Seriously, Bad Boy Bubby was told it was a comedy.
Wow, every week. Bad Boy Bubby. We get a Bad Boy Bubby reference.
It's a good film. I interviewed the director this week, actually.
I listened to that.
Isn't he wonderful?
Rolf to hear is amazing. I could listen to him endlessly, yeah.
Yeah, I could too. Let's move on to the next film, because we're not giving it enough time. I feel bad about this, but I haven't seen it, so sell it to me. This is... Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, so this is the sequel to the reboot prequel, which was Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which came out, I think, 2011 and starred James Franco and John Lithgow. And in that we get the kind of the origin or the rebooted origin story for how the Earth came to be inhabited by smart talking apes that will eventually be joined or met by Charlton Heston back in 1968. This one, look, I think this film stands alone. You don't have to have seen the first film or have it fresh in your memory.
I find that helpful.
So what the setup is this is a post-apocalyptic San Francisco. The Earth and most of its inhabitants have been decimated by simian flu caused by the kind of the tests on the apes that we see in the first film. And this is basically, this film is leading up to the confrontation between a band of survivors led by Gary Oldman and Australian actor Jason Clarke, and the apes led by Caesar, who is the CGI product of a lot of work, I think, at Weta Studios and Andy Serkis.
Let's hear the trailer.
It was a virus created by scientists in a lab. You can't blame the apes.
Who the hell else am I going to blame?
We need to give them a chance.
Welcome to animals. Please. I've seen things. I've seen the way they are. They want what we want, to survive.
Caesar, home. This is your home. Your home.
Are you aware they are going to turn on you?
They don't want a war.
No, don't shoot!
Josh Nelson is in the studio with me on 774. I thought that was a fabulous soundtrack. I love the drama.
It even gets in, which I think is part and parcel of blockbusters nowadays, the Inception sound, that kind of boom. Yeah, it's even there in the soundtrack at various points. Look, as far as big blockbuster Hollywood action fare goes, this is definitely one of the better ones and probably up there among the best of the year. It has a really nice build-up. The first two-thirds of the film I thought were pretty impressive. The one thing that really stood out with this film, given that I'm someone who tends to be pretty critical about CGI, it's computer-generated imagery, I think it's reached a new point with this film, a new sort of almost the zenith of how far it's come for the last sort of 10
years.
It was amazing, to the point that the performances by the CGI apes in this film far outweigh the performances of the humans, and which is a kind of a double-edged sword when you're getting out-acted by some zeros and ones in a
computer.
That
is hilarious. So the computer-generated characters were better than the real characters.
They were, and I think part of that has to do with the script. I mean, the problem with these types of films is inevitably when a Hollywood studio is investing $150 million, it feels like studio execs, everyone has got to have their chunk of flesh. So you get a kind of romantic subplot that doesn't really work, that feels like it's been thrown in to appeal to a broader demographic. You get a father-son relationship, which is pretty half-baked. And if you take away those things, there's actually a really nice story that plays on the kind of allegorical significance that was there in the earlier Apes franchise between, plays on bigotry and racism and kind of how we treat animals. And there's an environmental theme in this film as well. And look, that's all pretty worked
humans
out.
Humans destroying
well.
The planet, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. So look, there's some really
sort
nice...
Sort of subtle indoctrination. Climate change.
Yeah, there's a few conservative critics who every time these films come out say it's left-wing propaganda.
Some people don't even like Peppa Pig, mate.
Look, where this film went a little bit awry for me is probably the last, it's the third act syndrome. It reaches a nice crescendo, we get the kind of build-up to the battle, it should have ended, and then it goes on. And not only does it kind of kill the drama of the final 20 minutes, but... we have some really poor scripting where characters who've behaved in a particular way throughout the entire film suddenly change their motives quite randomly. Mm. So poor scripting, a little bit of poor direction. I'm not sure if it's enough to spoil the experience for me in hindsight. A lot of people have been saying I've been far too critical. But look, I think if you're in for some kind of sort of mindless action or a big blockbuster fare, this is definitely the one to go to.